CliffCentral.com.
Unleashed with Kagiso Murupi. Unleashed with Kagiso Murupi.
Hi Kagiso, this is Mam Hilda Tubatla from the Ma Hotel Queens. Kagiso, I must tell you, I'm really, really, really terribly disturbed about Brazil Masekela. These Obrahu, they are our real South African musicians. Obrahu, when they were doing their music, we were still at school, very, very young. Really, South Africa, we have really lost a big, the best, talented musician, Obrahu. Really, I must say, I'm crying. We've just lost about Johnny Mekwa and the rest of them. And now, today is Brahio. It is so painful. Really. May his soul rest in peace.
There's a train that comes from Namibia and Malawi. There's a train that comes from Zambia and Zimbabwe. There's a train that comes from Angola and Mozambique. From Lesotho, from Botswana, from Swaziland. From all the hinterlands of Southern and Central Africa. This train carries young and old African men who are conscripted to come and work on contract in the gold and mineral mines of Johannesburg and its surrounding metropoli. 16 hours or more a day for almost no pay. Deep, deep, deep down in the belly of the earth, when they are digging and drilling for that shiny, mighty, evasive stone, or when they dish that mishmash mush food into their iron plates with the iron shovel, or when they sit in their stinky, funky, filthy, flea-ridden barracks and hostels, they think about the loved ones they may never see again, because they might already have been forcibly removed from where they last left them, or wantonly murdered in the dead of night by roving and marauding gangs of no particular origin. We are told to think about their lands and their herds that were taken away from them with the gun and the bomb and the tear gas and the Gatling and the cannon. And when they hear that choo-choo train, a chugging and a pumping and a smoking and a pushing and a pumping, crying and a steaming and a chicken and a they always cuss and they curse the coal train. The coal train that brought them to Johannesburg.
Welcome to it, welcome to it. As we start the new year and all of us had New Year's resolutions and we are all just planning for the year, but unfortunately we had to say goodbye to a legend. You know, a baobab tree has fallen. And that's what the minister says, you know, we lost a legend, Brahu Ramaphosa Masekela, and, you know, he passed away yesterday. Peacefully, and you know, he finally gave in to the battle with prostate cancer, and today we're just dedicating this entire show to him, you know, and we're just going to be taking your voice notes, but as usual we're not going to change how the show works. We've got you know, someone that knew him very well, and that's what I like about it. You know, we've got someone that spent a lot of time with him. We've got And he's not just anybody, but he's also, you know, one of the best composers in this country, one of the best musicians in this country. You know, he's composed and directed, and he's worked with your Freshly Grounds, your Stimulus, your Ray Phiri, your Ringo Madlingosi, and the list goes on. And he worked with Brahe, Ladysmith, Black Mambazo, and we've got none other than I don't know what to say. Niti Taima Khrotmane, you know, Orekiri Baba. But ladies and gentlemen, Upravig Masondo is in the house. Ah, yeah. How are you, Pravik?
Hey, I'm very good.
Yeah, I mean, you're so stylish. You know, you're so stylish. And that's why you're like, Pravik, or you know. How are you doing?
No, very good, man.
I'm good, man.
Yeah.
Let's wheel.
Hey, man, it's a library. It's a whole library.
It's a whole library. And you know this tree, Maiwa, it has definitely made noise.
Yeah.
Across the world, and not just in South Africa, but across the world. And as someone that, you know, has worked very closely with him, someone who was just a friend, you know, even outside of music. We've just heard, you know, Mamtlo Batla from our Hotel Queens. And I just want to know, where are you right now?
You know, I must say, first, I was in a stage of like, it shocked me that I was shocked.
Yeah.
In other words,
it shocked you that you were shocked. Yeah.
Because I mean, I saw it coming. I managed to visit Ibrahim even at the hospital. And when I saw him there, I was really like, okay, get yourself prepared. You know, and that, you know, it didn't look good.
Yeah.
But he was still himself. You know, he was like a fighter. So he fools you with that. He used to fool you with that. He could fight anything. He looked like, you know, he was getting ready to put up a fight for this as well. But, you know, it's starting to settle now to say, oh, wow, it really just like, psh, that's it.
And that's prostate cancer for you.
Yeah.
You know, I also lost my dad to prostate cancer, and he was also bubbly. And you get to realize at some point, you know, you get to a point where you say, no. But take us back, you know, take us back. Because, you know, the whole point of today's show is obviously when a giant like Brahe passes on, you know, you've got a lot of people in media and a lot of people, and some people can see it as people stealing the spotlight.
Yeah.
You know, but we never get to talk to the people that actually knew him, that sat with him, that probably had a whiskey with him, right? You know, that probably had a whiskey with him. We want to see it from the normal Joe in the streets. And I have to tell you, when I look around and just the mood in the country, you know, it kind of reminds me of the time when we just found out that Nelson Mandela passed on.
Exactly.
Yeah. And it feels like that. Mm-hmm. You know, take us back. Take us back. When I know Brahe, we are happy, man. And we are happy.
You know,
because I know there's a lot of stories. I can just see it.
You know, probably the first time I met him, it was still like in your late 80s.
Yeah.
And I met you, Brahe, and I was like, you know, I met him on the other side, of course. And for who he was, he just came across as, hey, you know, no big deal. This is me.
Yeah, he out. Man.
And I was just blown over by just the character of Ibrahim.
Yeah.
And then later on, then we have Mama Makeba come back to the country.
Haha.
And on when she arrived back in the country, she wanted to do a new album.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was called actually to come and produce.
Yeah, let's call the maestro. Yeah, so that's you. Don't play it nice. Don't play it. Let's call the maestro. Yeah. Call Vic, Did he have a nickname for you?
He used to just call me Masonde. Say, hey, Masonde.
He was like, let's call Masonde.
Yeah, he used to call me Masonde. I mean, but you never knew what would come out of his mouth whenever he saw him. And we had lots of internal jokes.
Yes.
In our own private jokes. So he'd always just throw, you know, he would call you and just use a joke that nobody else in the building knows.
Yeah.
And he just delivered it. You're the only one falling apart, and he's just standing there like, so Mama Makeba comes to the country.
Yeah.
And Ibrahim also, you know, was now going to be working on the, he had some songs in there.
Yeah.
He was also going to be a co-producer in working on the album as well. So I had Ibrahim in the studio, and I tell you what, I've never laughed that much in my whole
entire
life.
Yeah.
Where to actually say, okay, I think we do need to work.
Yes, right now, yeah. As the language, music. Not comedians,
But now we're talking about, you know, that happened in the 90s. Actually, that was 89.
Yeah.
So we did the album, and then album is finished. And then, from then on, you know, Ubrahim would always latch onto you as a human being.
Yeah.
And
you
are in front of him. You are the only person in front of him.
Yeah.
And he used to give you that kind of attention.
Yes.
That made you feel like you're the only person. And, you know, besides the what we know, the craziness of jokes and all those things, Ubrahim used to adopt this attitude of, if I see you, I'm going to father you.
Okay.
I mean, I'll give you wisdom. I'll advise you through my experiences. I will teach you, you know.
And did he bring that across? Or you know, there's some people who just have that aura where you actually want them to father you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, bro, you never ask for permission. He'll come and look at you and say, this is what I will do.
Yeah.
And you're going to take it.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
No choice. Yeah. But, you know, and you know, we worked so well in that album. And then he would sit down and just be able to say, Masondo, there are a few things I want you to not do, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Avoid substance.
Yeah.
Because I know about it.
And which is something that he was open about.
Yeah, he said, look, you can see how messed up the rest of your friends are.
Yeah.
And don't go there. You know, I see you haven't touched it, you're not messing with it, just don't start.
Yeah, suga lapho.
And, you know, straightforward, you know. And so I'll be like, okay, you know, I'd appreciate this, you know, and he would stay on you though, you know, to make sure that it's not just like
he would father you, as you say.
He could joke about it, but he'd come back and say, I hope you got it that I was serious about that.
Yeah, and I'm still checking.
Oh yeah, I'm checking on you, you know. And that's Brahim. And also, you know, then he would friend you. He'd just be your friend as well. You know, and so but just, you know, and all of those things, and then the history. Oh my
The goodness. History. Oh. I think that's what people want to know, and it's the history.
Yeah, you know, because we really didn't get to understand who this man is in the country.
Yeah,
you know, you talk about, you know, him and Louis Armstrong buddies, him and
Miles Davis,
and all. I mean, he's relating to stories, and you know, and you're thinking about all these icons of people that you know that you knew. And Brahim used to stand out.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, I remember at that time I was a youngster, and myself, I was standing in front of giants like Mam Makeba, and also in front of me was another jazz legend, Dizzy Gillespie.
So I'm
working as a musical director for that part of the show, and I'm getting to learn from him. And I hear when he talks about Brahim,
he's talking about. He's talking about the man.
Yeah, the man has got a big sound. He said, "I love the African sound."
You know when you say that, I remember just listening to one of his interviews, and he was talking about, you know, him and Miles Davis and traveling, you know, obviously abroad, and he used to, you know, Miles would play, but when he started playing, Miles was like, "That's the one. I want that sound, you know, that's the sound that I want." And he kept just being authentic, right? And obviously I want to know, with just working with him, do you think that he just brought that up across, you know, the world? And is that why the world actually fell in love with him? Because he was authentic like that?
Yeah, you see, because Ubrahim was not the kind of conventionally trained.
Yeah.
As much as he did get into, he did study, he did do all of those things later on.
Yeah.
But how he started the instrument was natural.
Yeah.
And so for him, he wanted to get the best sound out of this instrument.
Yeah.
So he went beyond what your normal at school being
at
taught.
School. Yeah.
You know, he just wanted to hear something from him.
Yeah.
And he went to a place where those who are schooled would say, how did he get that sound? Because, you know, you must know, there's a difference. In trumpet and flugelhorn, he used the flugelhorn a lot.
Yeah,
and the flugelhorn is a different animal to trumpet. It's just, you know, it's different.
Yeah.
So, but when you heard him play the flugelhorn, and the sound would feel like it's surrounding you. You know.
Yeah.
And you know, and I'd be like, wow, it's amazing.
It's
amazing
how he's doing it.
Yeah. Because I mean, I would stand in my working with a man like Dizzy Gillespie.
Yeah.
And I would listen to the sound of him. You know, I mean, he used to be like mesmerized. And it's that same thing that, again, it feels like he's filled the one room And so Oprah, you had that.
Yeah.
He had that. He would just play and it'd be like, my goodness, I don't get to hear that all the time.
Yes.
You know,
you're just saying this.
Mm.
It's you painting this picture. And you're probably wondering why I'm just so excited. It's because I'm getting to understand the man himself. Mm-hmm. You know, and not just Ubaba Ngimbone TV or just the CD or what I listened to.
Yeah.
You know, and I like the fact when you say, Wuti, you know, standing out.
Exactly.
He was just a man that would stand out.
Yeah, he was a standout. You know, because his music was more than just, it was the extension of his life.
Yeah.
Because Uprahu really lived.
Like, yeah, he lived.
Now, I mean, a lot of the times we were not aware, people like the Crusaders, that we would have not known about the Crusaders if it wasn't for Uprahu. Because they were under his label.
Did you ever get a chance to go on the road with him?
Actually, you know what? We recorded a jazz album with Uprahu.
No. I like that smile already.
And then,
here comes the stories. Yeah.
And then we went to the Cape Town Jazz Festival.
Yeah.
To go and perform. Mm-hmm. And then, but you know, during the recording of the album and on its own.
Yeah.
The information that I got, because you record after we're recording. Then it's time to sit down. Now, Brahim has to, like, okay, let's eat, you know, and just, and relax.
Yeah.
And the time off music was even bigger lesson than the time on music.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I mean, you'd be sitting there and just listen to Brahim and be like, I don't know what to do with all this information. And, but, you know, he's the finest person. Life is not too serious with him.
Yeah.
It must be simple and be lived well.
There's one thing that people say about Brahim. They say that he had no filter.
No. You know,
put it as it is.
No, that's the best thing I loved about him.
Yeah.
If you're in front of him, and when he turns around and walks,
you
do not need to wonder what he's thinking.
Yeah.
Because you heard it.
And what he's going to say behind you.
Yeah.
Back. And he will say it straight to you.
No, you tell it straight. If you mess up, Brahim will tell it straight in your face. Listen, this is messed up.
Yeah.
Because of this and this and this, and I don't want to see it again like that. Boom, done. Finished. Take it or leave it.
Yeah.
That's it.
You know, I just going back to what you said, and I think what we need to learn, Wuti Brahim didn't go, I mean, he went later on to the conventional school of music.
Mm-hmm.
But what I learned from this is the fact that he says, Wuti, tatinto yenze kube yakho. And then go and still learn about it. So it's like going to university. A lot of the youth today, we go to university, we come out, and then we're hoping that we're just going to get a job. But we're actually not using what we've learned there to make it our own.
Exactly. You know, I wish we could have another show.
Yeah.
Just to talk about young people and university and waiting for employment. And, but anyway, we'll have that.
I want to to touch back because, you know, he fought for us in the struggle.
Yeah.
You know, take us through that and make people understand that when they say Wuti, he's an apartheid, you know, activist.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How did he do that through his music? I mean, we know he did it through his music, but how? Take us through that.
You know, when Brahim went overseas, with the whole thing sometimes of the word exile, I don't think we kind of understand what the rest of exile means.
Yeah.
You know, it can be exotic to be, you know, first accommodated by a country. You know, like you sit in New York and they say, oh, you can come and stay here for the first week, the second week, the third week, and the fourth week. When reality hits you that you can't go home, then you start to make home out of what is not home.
Yeah.
And then you're finding out that apartheid was not only what happened in South Africa, it's not what happened even in the U.S. Because you had the same people, the same opposition of certain people who fought against.
Yeah.
You know, there was a lot of struggling that was going on as well in exile, you know.
Mm.
And for Uprahu, I mean, you know, including when he was doing well in life, where police decided to come and raid his house.
Yeah.
And, you know, plant a couple of things that were not there.
Yeah.
You know, all those things. There are certain times where certain people let you let them know, hey, listen, you're not all that you think you are.
Yeah.
You've come here and we'll discipline you.
Yeah.
And also still knowing that at the back of your head, someone may still be following you.
Yeah.
You know,
everywhere you're going.
Yeah, because I mean, we've had some people who just had a car accident, you know.
Yeah.
A car just hit this guy. You're thinking, How did it hit him? Now you were standing at the lights and he just kind of fell to the
into the road and then
did you look who was behind him?
Yeah.
So I mean, in other words, you know, you had to have a panoramic view even when you're outside. You had to think very hard.
Because you see, when a prophet is that when people say exile, and I like the fact that you're narrating, Guti, what did our musicians and what did our politicians had to go through while they were that side? Yeah. I mean, Oprah, you traveled with like O.R. Tambo.
Yeah.
How was the relationship? I mean, do you know how the relationship was between him and O.R. Tambo? And there's also talks about, you know, Mandela sending him a letter.
Yeah.
You know, from prison, saying that, you know, I wanna have a conversation with you, and that's how that song just came about.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
you would see, what was it? It wasn't Bring Back Nelson Mandela, but I Wanna See Mandela.
Yeah.
Right. That song.
Yeah.
So I want to know, how did he get really involved in the politics? Was he forced into it or what?
No, you know, Brahiu by nature has been an activist.
Yeah.
You know, he's an underdog fighter.
Yeah.
Just by nature. So being a South African, he went there because his whole thing was, you know, there are things you couldn't say here.
Yeah.
Because even the media was very, very well controlled.
Yeah.
They showed things that they wanted the world to see.
Yeah. You know?
So what happened is if you started opposing
that
which is being painted by the South African government outside, the then South African government, if you started opposing what they are painting inside and showing them, no, this is the real how people are living, then that's when people will come for you. Because now they say, no, South Africa, you know, blacks are just needing some discipline. And some of the men are always wild. But, you know, things are changing in the country.
Yeah.
And then when you come and say they are not changing, here's what you do not know. And so all of a sudden you are surrounded by the opposition, because you must know apartheid was not only about people who were, what was going on in South Africa. There were those who were benefiting.
Yes, from it.
From it.
Internationally.
Internationally. And they knew everything about what was going on.
And they knew who was in the country.
Exactly. So, you know, knowing that you're out there fighting who you do not know plus who you know is not as easy as it looked. So, I mean, it's so many stories that I can tell you now, but it's just unbelievable.
We are hanging out with another legend who's talking about another legend, a fallen legend, but I think his music lives on. You know, you're listening to Unleashed, and we're on cliffcentral.com. Send us your voice notes on 079-748-2090. And, you know, I just want to play you some of the voice notes that we got from some of, you know, the people that lived with Brahiu and had fun with him. Let's take a listen.
When I stop and think about Brahiu, I think back to 1998. I was involved in a project called Pakamani, and we had decided to do a fundraiser asking musicians to come and cook their favorite meal, and then guests would come, invited guests would come and purchase the meals and have an evening of fellowship and eating. This was over near the Alexandra area. And so artists came out, and Brahiu, Ray Perry, Faith Kekana, Yvonne Chaka Chaka, Spongilu Kumalo, just a real great outpouring for Pakamani, which was to be and did become a music business curriculum course to be shared. And when I think back now, Brahiu and Ray were in the kitchen, Ray Perry, cooking up a storm. The interesting thing is that everybody ate the food, so there was very little, the cooks ate the food, and there was very little left over for the guests. But that was really my first opportunity to spend some quality time. And after that particular event, any time I was in hearing distance, whether it be a festival or at the Market Theater or some program, he would seek me out. Hey, Cece, are you okay? And he was always checking to make sure that the decision to move and live in South Africa was one I was still comfortable with. And so through the years, my relationship with him was based upon his caring about me. So I have fond memories. I have good memories. I'm really grateful for that.
Yeah. I mean, that's just, I want to ask Pravik.
Yes.
Who was that? Who was that?
So yeah, I can see you guys have been busy, huh? Mm,
yeah, we're busy. Who was that?
That is Mrs. Masondo.
That's right? Mrs. Masondo. Yeah. That, you must say that's my girl.
Yeah, uh-huh. I've been working
on. You know, I'm so interested because you said, you know, he was more of like a father.
Mm.
What role do you think he played in your marriage?
No, he'd always, you know, look.
Because he knew both of you, and you both knew him, right?
Yeah, Brahir is someone who also was, you know, he was with married to an American woman before.
Yeah.
So he had a couple of advice.
Yeah. This is how you deal with Americans. Yeah.
No, yeah, he had a few advice, but, you know, he was very much like loving, supporting, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, Brahim would just do things very easily.
Yeah.
And, you know, he didn't make a big deal out of it, but he'd say, hey, watch A, B, and C. But, you know, hey,
yeah.
Whenever he saw me, he would ask about her. When he saw her, he'd ask about
you.
Yeah. So that's in itself is almost like the conscious thing in the back of my mind that I'm looking out for both of you. You
know, yes. Yeah. I heard something, you know. I mean, I don't know if I can ask this, but I mean, I can. I mean, Brahim was a charmer boy, right? and apparently, I mean, he was a charmer boy.
Yeah.
And how was it, you know, just did you ever hang out with him and your wife and maybe in somebody else?
Well,
tell us about, I mean, you know, if it's boy talk now. Yeah.
No, look. Yeah. Whenever it was me and my wife and him, he would always be
behaved.
Yeah. But I've been with him when it was just me and him.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember we were with also Larry Willis, the pianist.
Yeah.
And somebody came on to Brahim.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it should always happen like that too.
Yeah, yeah.
This woman just came and started, you know, just being all over him. And I just saw him doing his little smile.
Yeah.
And he comes back into the room and he said, hmm.
My son,
I was like, I had no evil, I saw no evil. He said, well, you know, I think she was just trying to be generous.
Yeah.
let's stop it right there because this is radio and this is daytime.
Yeah. Too. But apparently, you know, Brahim, I'm at Brahim, and there's this aura about him.
Mm.
You know, and it's something that you don't just get.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do you think that did at any point did he take advantage of his aura, or did he even know that he had this aura about him?
You know, the big thing about Brahim was he was a very humble human being.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, a lot of people may disagree with me.
Yeah.
So he whenever the one thing about his stature would come through, if somebody kind of treated him like a superstar, he would kind of tone it down on the person and start relating human. You know?
Yes.
He would not allow you to treat him like that.
Yes.
He didn't like it when people were doing that whole thing to him. He'd be like, come on, tone it down. I'm just here.
Yeah. And, you know,
yeah.
It's either we're going to talk at that level or we're going to talk at this level. Yeah, Which level do you want?
You know, but he would always just want to relate to everybody. Like, can we all be human?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
The kind of person I was talking to, bro, welcome Swami, when he'd come to visit them in Brooklyn, he would never come but climb out of a limo.
Yeah.
He'd just go in and just get in a cab and come out of a cab and just use the subway.
Yeah.
And people are like, oh my goodness. And it's like, come on. It's
just me. Speaking of Bra, welcome so me. And I mean, I'm gonna say Bra, you know, because I'm in the space. I'm in the space. We've got him on the line. Bra, welcome.
Yes.
A legend, and a baobab tree has fallen.
Yes. I mean, one of those things where when it happens, you think, you are in a dream,
and
the dream is going to subside.
Yeah,
but the reality is that the dream continues to be with us.
Yeah,
and what needs to happen is to yes to mourn, but it's important to celebrate.
Yeah, yeah.
celebrate a great life. Great life that touched so many, many people around the world.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Baba Welcome, one person says that, you know, the sound of your horn is going to echo throughout the world. It's going to echo forever in our hearts. And for me, the sound of the horn is not just, you know, through his music, but it was through his lessons. And my question is, what do you think, you know, Brahu wanted us as young Africans to know?
He always wanted to inspire young people.
Yeah.
To stand on their own, to value their riches, to value their culture, and not to try and look at other people and try to be other people, except themselves, and that is why at times he was very serious. You know, about fake hair. Every time you're with him and young people, young women come and ask to take a photograph. And then he says, no, I don't want to take a photograph with you.
Mm-hmm.
And then the woman is shocked.
Yeah, they lost it.
I says, why? And they always think he's joking. And then so of course, no, just a minute, you know. And then he says, you know what? You have fake hair. That is not your hair, you know. And I'm not taking a photograph with someone with a fake hair.
Yeah.
And also in that, what do we learn from him?
Yeah.
We learn honesty. And he did not care whether you like it or not.
Mm-hmm.
But he would be honest, you know.
Yeah.
If he's performing and you're busy chatting away,
he
will stop the music.
Yeah.
And tell you to get up.
Yeah.
If you really want to listen, you know. And people are shocked, you know, because they are used to that disrespect, you know.
Wow.
But with humor, Sigela, he was always honest, you know.
But I'm sitting here with Pravik Masondo, you know, and I mean, I'm just asking from both of you, do you think that Brahu would have made the best principal eskolweni namhlanje?
Yo, that's a serious question, eh?
I think he would lock the gate, you know. In anyone who's late, he would lock the gate and make sure that every one of those kids are focusing on what they're supposed to do, you know. And that is what I always admired about him, and he never tried to be loved, you know, by politicians. You know, he was straightforward. In that, yes, he would do certain things for other people, and then at times he would say no. You know, and every time when he says no, people are shocked. But that is the truth. And that was humor together,
You know, that's true. I mean, before I let you go, I just wanted to know, you know, any your personal relationship with him and anything that you would really just to you
no,
know,
no, no,
say
my personal
there.
Relationship is that at one time, Sis Barbara, when she was the ambassador in France, then called me and said, oh, my brother's coming back to South Africa. And it would be good for you guys to get together, you know. And then I said, of course, you know, that would be great.
Yeah.
So we got together with you, and it was, we said, wow, what a going to be a great relationship, you know. These artistic guys becoming businessmen and all that stuff. So we put together the company, and
Yeah.
And then came time to meet with other business people, other potential investors, and all that. Now, what I did not anticipate was that he doesn't attend meetings in the morning.
Yeah. So now, let's talk now, after 11. Yeah.
And then he would show up, you know, very late, and I said, "Hey, human, no, people have been here since 9 o'clock, you know, but they're gone, you know."
Yeah.
No, it's just, but they should have waited, you know. I don't come in at work at 9, you know.
Yeah.
So then I also realized that he had his own pace.
Yes.
I mean, even with recording, you know, people would get there to the recording studio, and I remember we were working on another album.
Yeah.
And then, guess what? You know, and we thought he was not going to show up.
Yeah.
You know, when everybody had gone, and you know.
And there comes
what are they? You know, I'm ready to record.
I just want to ask something here, you know, and I see, you know, I know that you're running a program, you know, to obviously honor our legends and while they're still alive.
Yes.
You know, and I want to applaud you for that, firstly. You know, because you. I've
we must applaud Natim Tessa, who came up with the idea.
I think it's amazing, but I don't want to get into the politics of it.
Yeah.
But my question is, if Brahu was the Minister of Arts and Culture, what do you think he would change?
You know, one thing what he would I think what he would change.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, he would look at the SABC, you know,
right,
and change everything, you know, and because the SABC doesn't represent South African culture, it doesn't promote, you know, South African talent.
Yeah.
So I think he would make sure, and also I think he would fire a lot of people.
Yeah,
you know?
A lot of people. We know that.
he doesn't mince his words. You know? So he was so brilliant.
Yeah.
In the way he was.
Yeah.
That he told you straight away.
Yeah.
Whether he likes you or he doesn't like you. Not that it maybe doesn't like you.
And it would also give you the reason why.
Yeah.
Or sometimes not. Just like that's it.
Yeah.
And that is what we're going to need.
Yeah.
We had planned, you know, to do a big tribute for him in his honor. And but which we are going to do at some point. As one of our legends, and we're planning to do that with most of the legends, in that they go away once they've passed on.
Yeah.
That is when you start talking about them.
Yeah,
you
know? And naming places after them or erecting statues.
Yeah.
And you say, and as Rico was saying, that, you know, they talk about you on radio.
Yeah, yeah.
You are this, and they play your music, you know.
Yeah,
and for days.
Yeah, but that's true.
Why don't they do it?
While you're still alive,
you know?
Yeah.
And
I think Claudia had a plan there.
So we just have to make changes, and that is why we have the Living Legend.
Yeah.
Because we want to bring about change, you know? And
that's
especially
the key.
On sort of points of culture, and also just to inspire young people.
Yeah.
Abdullah Ibrahim has done an amazing job, not that the others haven't, they all did the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And those kids were so inspired, you could hear a pin drop.
you know,
when he's talking about the music, about the discipline.
You know, you know? So you and I will sit and talk the whole day about this giant tree.
Yeah, I know, I mean.
And I really appreciate you, you know, just calling in and having a conversation with us.
Thank you so much, and just keep up the good work, guys. Yeah.
And I'd really like to,
make sure when there are birthdays, you mention the birthday of Hugh Masekela instead of Michael Jackson.
Thank you very much, Papa. And I'd really like to, obviously you and I, we still chat more because I'm also pushing the same thing that you are. And I'm doing it as a young person.
We must sit there.
I still have a lot of energy in me, but thank you for calling in.
Okay, thanks for inviting me.
No, thank you very much.
And can I quote Babu what you would say to Bamsom whenever I saw him? Window at Bamsom.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm gonna miss that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about a legend here, you know, and we hang out with Oprah Vic Masondo, and we're just having all these legends call in and send us their voice notes. Please send us your voice notes. The number is 079-748-2090. And we've got another legend. I mean, an African star, an international star, that wants to pay tribute to Oprah Hugh.
Hello, this is Hugh Sundur from Dakar, Senegal. It's a very sad day for us. I have lost a brother, and Africa has lost a baobab. Rest in peace, brother Hugh. Thank you for everything you did for us. We never forget.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all over the world.
Yeah.
It's all over the world.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's very hard when you've got a friend.
Mm-hmm.
That knows too many people.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, you know, and here's just a general question. Have you, just from yesterday up until now,
mm-hmm.
when you watch the news and they're interviewing different people, was there at any, because this, you are someone that knew Brahim, mm-hmm. is there any point where you watch the news and you're like, hello?
Hey, well,
and you're thinking to yourself,
hey, man,
I want to know. I want to know.
Yeah, there are quite a few of those moments. You know, I mean, it's such a pity because, you know, people, whenever you something like this has happened, everybody has got a claim.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
and all of us have known Oprah Hugh up to a certain level. We cannot claim more or less.
Than, or less.
You know.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, I mean, I know some people actually who did not really like him in life.
Yeah.
You know, kind of kept a distance, but now they're like, hey, you know, I lost a friend.
Okay.
If only you get up and punch you in the nose, brother.
Yeah. You know, I want to ask you a very interesting question because, you know, we're about to also just talk to Damon, who was, you know, Brahim Masekela's, you know, tour manager, right? And here's the thing. I just want to ask you a huge question. And we were talking with Ulon Upramsomi. Upramsomi was, you know, we say our legends are not celebrated.
Mm-hmm.
But when you talk about Hugh Masekela, he was celebrated here. And he was celebrated overseas. If we're talking about a legend that was celebrated, that is Hugh Masekela. And what I learned, you know, I learned something that he was saying, which I am still learning.
Mm-hmm.
And when he came back, I mean, he worked with Thandisa Mazwai. At that time, they were seen as Kwaito artists, you know, where another legend would be like, you know, I'm not going to do that music, where there was a lot of issues with Kwaito music.
Yeah.
Do you think that's what made Brahim become celebrated? Because he worked with, he adjusted.
You know, Brahim was a giving person.
Yeah.
And I really, you know, I feel for me that I wish it could be celebrated more.
I
don't think we understood the magnitude of who Brahim was.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we got it.
Yeah.
But, you know, Brahim was giving. He didn't mind. Anybody wanted to work with him.
Yeah.
He was always happy to be in the space of sharing and giving his gifts to the next generation.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he was focused on doing that.
Yeah.
Which was, you know, one of the most powerful things about his life. He was never distant. He always wanted to be in the lives of everyone else.
Yeah. Because I also heard what someone said, you know, this morning that Brahim said to him, don't ever call yourself a musician if you can't play an instrument. because if you can't play an instrument, then you're just part of the computer. How do you feel about that?
Well, I mean, Brahi was being very honest, because you know what happened is we've got people now who have taken over, you know, because you can spin discs and put samples together, and then you can then say that you are a musician. I mean, and again, it's been interesting to know that the people who are taking over in the music now have been more the DJs.
Yeah.
And again, and please don't get me wrong there, because I know when you're talking about a Black Coffee, for an example,
yes,
that's a musician.
Yeah, he's a musician.
He's a
Black
musician.
Coffee can play.
He can play. He does all of these things, and we know even in his history how he even got. He was playing piano.
Yeah,
until the accident.
Yeah.
You know, so you look at people like that who are creative in what they're doing.
Yeah.
And so, but there are those who just thought, okay, if I just take the sample, put the sample and do this, and then I can call myself a musician.
Like, yeah.
If I had to remove those samples, could you recreate them?
And that would be the problem. That would be the problem.
Yeah, that would be,
that would be the problem.
Yeah.
We're talking about Brahi Masekela, and, you know, he's passed on, but, you know, he's the sound of his horn is still echoing, and it will continue to echo, and we're taking your voice notes, and... right now, we've got a voice note from, you know, George Cruz, who was his tour manager in the States, and we just want to hear what he has to say.
My name is George Cruz. I live in Providence, Rhode Island, in the United States. And in 2007 and 2008, it was my good fortune to serve as tour manager for Hugh Masekela in the United States and Canada. I got to work closely with him, watching him on and off stage, accompanying him to interviews, lectures, master classes, and other events. I had been familiar with his music and a little of his story, but as I came to know him better, he became, and will always remain, one of my personal heroes. He was, of course, a superb musician, but I remember him most for his generosity of spirit, his wise counsel, his humor, and his profound dedication to celebrating the basic humanity that can and must unite us all. On a break between tours, I read his autobiography, Still Grazing, in which he is gracious and forgiving to almost everyone, but unsparing of himself. He told of his escape from the corrosive, systematic humiliation machine of apartheid, his years spent in anger and bitterness and reckless behavior, and how he overcame all that to become the thoughtful, peaceful man I knew. I told him at the time that, having read it, I was prouder than ever to be working for him, but that I was glad I wasn't there for his earlier life, which made him laugh. Some of the memories that came back to me today are not so much of the concerts, although they were of the highest level. I remember him afterwards, patiently greeting and signing autographs for long lines of fans, sometimes for over an hour. The band would be packed up and waiting on the bus, but Hugh would not leave until everyone who wanted a moment with him was accommodated. I would tell him that he didn't need to do that, that people would understand, and he would say that he had promised himself that as an entertainer, he must respect the audience who had come to see him. I remember him teaching a master class to the jazz band at a university in California. He had each section play what sounded like an almost random series of notes, and then had them all play their parts together. Now, I am not a musician myself, so I can't tell you what it was, but it was unexpectedly beautifully harmonious. The students were astonished, and we all broke out laughing. I remember being taken to lunch by some academics and activists during Barack Obama's first presidential campaign. They asked for Hugh's analysis, and he not only predicted Obama's victory, but the obstacles and impediments that would be placed before him. We probably should all have seen that coming, but none of us had Hugh's clear-eyed perception. Mind you, he wasn't cynical. It's just that his optimism was in a longer time frame. And so today I join all of South Africa, the music world, and the world at large in honoring the memory of Hugh Ramapolo Masekela. There will never be another like him, but he will always be with us.
Ah, man. And that was George Cruz, you know, who was his tour manager, and I saw you know, I saw a screenshot of the BBC newspapers, and they said, you know, farewell, Uncle Hugh. Mm-hmm. I mean, for someone to be called Uncle Hugh.
Yeah.
And you know, on the line, I believe that we finally got hold of Damon, you know, who was a promoter for, you know, Uncle Hugh overseas. And let's just find out from him. How's it, Damon?
Good morning, sir. Good afternoon.
How are you?
I'm doing great, man. Very very sad to hear the news yesterday morning about Brother Hugh Masekela, one of the all-time great cultural icons.
Yeah.
On the African continent and around the world.
No, man, I appreciate you taking out the time, and you know, I just wanted to know that, you know, what was the mood like, you know, when you know, when you went out on a night with Brother Hugh, you know. I believe you've got that information.
Well, I mean, he was me and many musicians had talked about it. He was actually the last time we did the Joy of Jazz, we had a Sasmo trumpet summit, and some of the musicians, two musicians, one is James Andrews and Kid Merv. Actually Kid Merv played Grazing in the Grass, New Orleans style, for Hugh in Johannesburg. And you know, Brother Hugh was just one to actually bring it. And I remember another time I had some visitors from the U.S. actually at the Military Park big festival, the Legends Festival. And he was just Hugh Masekela, man. You know, he was an icon and a person that you're going to miss, and that probably will never be replaced, because he had the legendary status, you know.
Yeah.
In the vein, when you say Nelson Mandela, you know, people here think of also Hugh Masekela because of the music and the song, you know, Bring Back Nelson Mandela.
Yeah. So, I mean, sorry, man. I know that, you know, in New Orleans, the jazz is so huge, you know, and I want you to kind of paint it for us, you know, for us who are in South Africa, who wished to be able to see Brother Hugh perform overseas. What would a performance by Hugh Masekela be like in New Orleans? Paint it for us.
Well, I actually had a chance to perform with him at the New Orleans Jazz Festival. And I think the year 2000 or 2001.
Yeah.
And the same closing song that Hugh did in South Africa and around the world. Of course, he did it in New Orleans, but because Louis Armstrong was said to have given him one of his first trumpets, you know, New Orleans was very special to Hugh Masekela.
Yeah.
And he would probably, inside of himself, he would probably, you know, be proud to represent and play in New Orleans because of the kinsmanship that New Orleans has with jazz, you know, being the birthplace.
Yeah.
And you would just get the best out of him, man.
Yeah. I can only imagine.
So, and imagine that, you know, so Hugh Masekela was already great, but in New Orleans, you would just see the very best.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, I just wanted to find out before I let you go, you know, do you guys have any plans to, you know, like maybe a memorial service or a festival that you guys are planning around this?
Well, keep your eyes on Nosakan, the New Orleans South African Connection, and Damon Baptiste. The Baptiste father and sons, we're going to be opening up the day for doing the New Orleans Jazz Heritage Festival, and you can best bet and guarantee that we're going to have something very special for Brother Hugh Masekela, all his fans, and people from around the world. We're going to do something very, very nice that's fitting for the man known as Grazing in the Grass.
Ah, man. Damon, I tell you, it's 40 degrees in South Africa, but I've got goosebumps just listening to what you have to say.
Thank you, sir. One of the lessons that Hugh Masekela told me personally,
yeah,
during the 10th anniversary when we did the South Africa, you know, I was the actual producer that connected South Africa in the United States at the Jazz Fest to do the 10th anniversary celebration. And Hugh Masekela was featured. And he just wrote, he said, learn, 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 teach, teach, teach.
That is
directly from Hugh Masekela. So if everybody could take a lesson from that,
yeah,
to learn, 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 and teach, 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 our music and our jazz community will be a much better place.
And thank you, Damon. Thank you for coming on to the show. And I hope that, you know, when you guys do this special thing, I will definitely be invited because I would like to just see it, you know.
Brother, trust me, we will be in touch. Thank you for even considering talking to me about somebody we all love.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, thank you very much. And thank that was, you know, Damon, all the way from New Orleans. And he was, you know, he's a promoter and he worked very closely with Brahue Masekela. And what I like about what he says, Brahue says, learn, learn, learn. Uh-huh. Teach, teach, teach. And even at the age of 74, he always said, I am still learning.
Oh, yeah.
We've come to the end of the show. You know, it's only an hour, and I wish we could talk more and more and more. And there's so many people, so many voice notes. But I just want to say thank you very much, Pravik.
Oh, you're welcome.
Condolences to you.
Hey, man.
You know, condolences to you and condolences to South Africa, condolences to the world. Especially. Any last words?
The last words, as Brahue was always saying, you know, just keep the music going and... He's famous, you know. He had so many big jokes that he always said whenever he saw you. So he said, just Masondo, whenever you've learned, teach someone.
Yeah.
And that's a simple thing. And what, you know, through my experiences, I've learned what to and what not to do. So share your experiences, both bad and good, because even the ones you hide, they've got more value to someone to say, I don't like this, but you can learn from it not to be. You know, so
in that,
he's very open book. That's the one thing I loved about Brahue.
Oh man, what I take from what you just said is each one teach one.
Yep,
a tree has fallen, but its sound will echo in our hearts and in our minds for a very long time. And I don't think at any point, you know, there'll be a time where these lessons are going to stop, because these lessons are going to continue with us even from beyond the grave. He continues to teach us. The show is unleashed on cliffcentral.com, and you've been hanging out with me, Kagiso Modupi, and Pravik Masondo, and obviously our producer Vanessa Tlobatla. And hang out with us, you know. And thank you to Palisa as well, who's just been very helpful for us today. Hang out with us next week, your favorite hour of the week, from 3 p.m. to 4 p.m. every Wednesday.
CliffCentral.com.